Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcome you back to the show this week. And guys, the season has unofficially begun. Yes, winter testing is officially underway in Barcelona, and that means we are now just 21 days away from FP1 at the Australian Grand Prix. But before then, we're going to get through a lot of things. We're going to learn a lot of things, hopefully, as the teams test and shake down their cars at Barcelona over the next week or so. And we're going to get into it in just a moment here. And there is a ton of news to get through, and we're really going to be pressed to cover it all in the next hour or so. And that's a big reason why I decided to get the show out a day early this week, because my notepad was just starting to really fill up. I thought if I keep going, then this is going to turn into like an hour and a half or 2 hour show, and that just tends to be a little bit too long. It becomes a lot of work to put together and to record and edit and try and assemble all the information. But it's all good. It's exciting to be talking about Formula One again in a meaningful way. Well, I mean, it's always meaningful, but there are things happening on the track, and that's always a good thing. But just going back to some other news, just to follow up from last week, there has been a move to potentially replace or reschedule the Chinese Grand Prix at the end of the year with maybe a two-day event in November between the Brazilian and Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Of course, the Chinese Grand Prix was canceled about a week or 10 days ago because of ongoing concerns about the spread and the containment of the coronavirus and the whole outbreak and what the Chinese authorities are trying to do to keep that from spreading any further. And like I said last week, it's the right thing to do when it comes to people's health, especially when it's something so serious. But again, of course, as Formula One fans, we would like to see the race go on when it is possible and reasonable and safe to do so. And if they can schedule in at the end of the year, that would be wonderful. And I really wonder if they can pull it off, because I mean the schedule's jam-packed as it is, and it would be great on one hand if they can do it in November, but it's still the way that things are going now. We're going to have a big gap between the Vietnamese Grand Prix on the 5th of April and then when they pick up again on the 3rd of May at the Dutch Grand Prix. Well, actually, it's the 30th of April when FP1 goes in Holland, but still, we're going to have a long gap right at the very beginning of the season. And I guess from one point of view, from a Formula One point of view, that is, it's a good thing. And despite losing the Chinese Grand Prix in between there, at least after the first three races, it gives the teams the chance to go back and reevaluate and see what they've learned over the first couple of races of the year. Because typically when we get to the European portion of the season anyways, by the time we get to Spain, it's usually the first European race on the calendar each and every year. That's where we usually see the first round of upgrades and updates that the teams bring to apply to their cars after the first couple of races. So what with that month in between, we'll see what happens then. It should be fascinating to see from that point of view, even though it's going to be like having the summer break right up early. So again, on one hand, like I said, it is a good thing just to on the safety and the health point of view, but on the other side, it is a little bit difficult to take such an extended break early in the year. But I suppose it is well, it is what it is, right? When it comes to people's health and safety, you really can't be too safe and too careful. And from that point of view, I think it still is the right decision to make. And also, there was another option that's out there, and that is Imola has offered to host the Chinese Grand Prix, even though they do admit that it's a bit of a long shot. I mean, it's been a while since we've had a Formula One race there. I mean, they lobbied to get the Italian Grand Prix there. there in 2016. They had a GP2 series in March 2011. But I mean, it's been a long time since they've had a Formula One race there, and it might be just a little bit unrealistic, or a little bit, well, maybe not unrealistic, but I'm not really sure how the track is at this point and how it is for safety and all the Formula One standards with the pits and stuff like that. So I would just rather that if the Chinese Grand Prix can't go, I mean, perhaps maybe just cutting it back the season by a race is the right thing to do after all. I mean, why go somewhere else that isn't fully prepared to host a Grand Prix just for the sake of getting a race in, especially if the facilities and the track aren't up to standards at any rate. Anyways, we're going to get into everything in just a moment here. We're going to break away a little earlier than usual from a message from our sponsor. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Living with chronic pain is the worst. It's more than a feeling of discomfort. It can affect your whole life. Many of my listeners probably have some type of pain that has prevented them from relaxing or sleeping or stopped them from exercising. Perhaps it's been ongoing for a few weeks now and hasn't improved with any of the treatment that they've tried. Enter Omax Health. If you're looking to get rid of nagging muscle and joint pain immediately while providing long-lasting recovery, then you need to try the natural breakthrough pain relief solution, CryoFreeze CBD Roll-On, developed by Omax Health. This non-prescription, triple-action pain relief roll-on is specially formulated to block pain receptors, reduce inflammation, and improve muscle and joint flexibility. The best part is this 100% natural CBD-powered remedy works its magic within 10 minutes of application, and relief lasts up to 8 hours, much longer than the over-the-counter products. Omax Health is offering my listeners 20% off a full bottle of CryoFreeze CBD Pain Relief Roll-On, plus free shipping. This discount also applies towards any product site-wide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today and enter code OVERTIME. That is omaxhealth.com and enter code OVERTIME to get 20% off CryoFreeze and site-wide. Still not sold? I can tell you that pro athletes such as PGA pro golfer Kyle Stanley uses CryoFreeze CBD to recover both on and off the court. And go look at the product reviews. They've got 95% 5-star reviews, page after page of customers saying that they've tried everything, and Omax CryoFreeze is so good, they are now buying it for their family and friends too. Anyone from athletes to Grandma Josie can benefit from this immediate pain relief. You have pain that won't go away? Then you qualify for Omax CryoFreeze. Simply roll it over where it hurts and ice out the pain. No messy creams or horrible fragrances like some of those other products. CryoFreeze works within 10 minutes of application, improving physical training, recovery, and performance. So go to omaxhealth.com and enter code OVERTIME to get 20% off CryoFreeze and site-wide. I'm telling you, this product is the real deal, so go to omaxhealth.com and enter code OVERTIME to get 20% off and site-wide. All right, well, welcome back to the show. And, well, like I say, it is all go at Barcelona. Winter testing in full swing over the past couple of days. And, well, after the first day or so, it is a couple of very familiar names at the top of the time charts. And that is the silver arrows of Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas leading the way in winter testing. Lewis set a fastest time of a 1:16.976, followed by Bottas setting a 1:17.313, followed up by Sergio Perez in the Racing Point. He set a time of 1:17.375, so actually not all that far off Valtteri, just about 6.5 hundredths of a second. Then followed up by Max Verstappen, Danny Kvyat, Carlos Sainz, Danny Ricciardo, Esteban Ocon, and, that's a bit of a surprise here. I'm jumping ahead of myself. We've got George Russell in the Williams in ninth, and Lance Stroll in 10th. Charles Leclerc filling in for Sebastian Vettel, who was under the weather a little bit, setting a time of 1:18.289 in the Ferrari SF1000. That was only good for 11th fastest on the timesheets, but early days yet. I mean, remember this time last year, it was a Ferrari that got way off to a big, huge start. Came out of the gate flying. They were about a a second lap faster than everyone else. And then by the time we got to Australia a couple of weeks later, it didn't really matter because, it just didn't translate to speed on the track. And of course, at winter testing, their rivals in Red Bull and Mercedes just didn't get it together in such a quick fashion. I mean, Mercedes really took a little bit of time to really understand the W10 completely and how it behaved in real life on the track under more stressful conditions, not race conditions, but on the track at any rate. And it took a little while to get the car dialed in, whereas Red Bull had a little bit of problems. They had to deal with an accident when Pierre Gasly crashed, and that limited the time for Max Verstappen, so they just really didn't get a lot in. So it is interesting to see. I must admit, I was a little bit disheartened when I saw that, because the extreme part of my brain started to panic right off the bat. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again. Mercedes are just going to crush it this year, and it's all going to be over by the time we get to Monaco in June, and the rest of the world championship is going to be a foregone conclusion. But that is a very, very long way off, and I'm sure that a lot is going to happen between now and then. Pardon me. So I should just relax and realize that it's not going to be all that easy for Mercedes. Or at least I hope it's not going to be. But just to put that into context, pardon me, I'm looking at my notes here. The times that were set by Mercedes today, just in contrast to the Spanish Grand Prix last year. So Valtteri Bottas was on pole last year. He set times in Q1, Q2, and Q3 during qualifying was 116.979. Q2 was a 115.924. And then Valtteri really throwing it down in Q3 to claim pole. He set a pole time of 1:15.406, and compared that to Lewis Hamilton. He set a Q3 time of 116.040, and we had Sebastian Vettel in there sitting at 116.272. So, I mean, that was a very, very impressive time from Valtteri Bottas, just to name off a couple of the front runners there. Anyways, the fastest lap during the race was set by Lewis Hamilton. He set a time of 1:18.492. So that just I think puts the times in context a little bit. It really is going to be interesting to see how times compare to last year. I mean, this year the regulations are frozen. We're not going to see any real big changes until next year, when everything is completely brand new and the new formula comes into effect in 2021. And so it will be like I say, it will be very interesting to see how the times compare, not just during winter testing, but as we go to all these tracks. I mean, of course, Vietnam and Holland are going to be completely different, because Hanoi is a completely new track. Zandvoort, they haven't been there since, what, the 1980s. Plus, they've got this new bank corner at the end. So those are going to be new. But anyways, at all the established tracks, it'll be something to watch to see how those times compare, if they stay roughly the same, if they're quicker or slower, or how it's going to shake out. But interesting to see so far on the first day or so of testing that the times really aren't all that vastly different. excuse me. So just moving along, this, like I was saying just now, I was panicking a little bit to a certain extent that Mercedes were going to walk away with it, but then was immediately followed up by some more positive news. And the first of which was Max Verstappen saying that the new Red Bull, the RB16, is fast everywhere. So that is extremely interesting and fascinating to hear Max saying that. And Verstappen had to say the following, quote, "The car is fast everywhere, which is a good thing. And reliability seems even better, so that is all very positive. I think it's been a good day. The car has been working really well together with the engine, and that is what we want to see. For us, that is the most important. I'm very happy about that. We just want to learn the car and try the things on the car and see what we can do." End quote. So that is very, very interesting. I mean, they have this new philosophy that they want to get off to a quicker start this season. And last year, I mean, they had a good year. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Red Bull had a good year with the first season of having Honda power in the cars. And but the problem was that by the time that they were really able to come out and really, I think, make their stamp on the season, they had a very good race, I thought, in Spain. I think that was clearly, for me, the one of the first indications that they were ahead of Ferrari in the running order, not just in that race, but that the RB15 was a better car than the SF90. And Ferrari's still at that point where it looked like they were just miles off of the pace compared to Red Bull and also to Mercedes, obviously. But the big problem was that by the time we got to Spain, I mean, we were in that that run of unbelievable Mercedes form where they went just crushed it over the opening 8 or 9 races, winning race after race after race, and all the 1-2s between Bottas and Hamilton. And that really was where the season was decided, was in that first third or first quarter of the season, as those two basically disappeared off into the sunset. And so hopefully, and I think this is a word that I sort of pull out, or maybe I don't pull it out, but it's a word that sort of pops to the forefront in my mind when I think about Formula One and the state where it is right now. And I've said this before, I really do not have a problem with Mercedes winning or Lewis Hamilton winning. I would just like to see somebody challenge them more often. And I think that's what's made it a little bit more, I know it's made it more exciting from time to time when we've seen guys be able to challenge Bottas or Hamilton, especially at the front, or where they get mixed up a little bit when the running order gets jumbled up because of a safety car, or like the bizarreness that we had at the German Grand Prix at Hockenheim last year in the rain. The rain's always good for that. It tends to mix things up, and you get to see who the really good drivers are in the wet. But just under normal racing conditions, I'd like to see a little bit more parity. It would be more fun to see these guys mixing up at the front more often. And if at the end of the day, Lewis Hamilton has to fight it out and win, or Valtteri Bottas for that matter, you know, I'm fine with that that too. But having said that, if Max is feeling more positive about the car, he feels like it's faster and more of an improvement on the car from last year, and this new philosophy that Red Bull is coming to the season with, that they want to be more competitive, they want to be challenging quicker in the season so they don't lose ground in the championship, I think that's nothing but a good thing. But again, early days yet. I mean, a couple of days testing is one thing. We still are 21 days away from the Australian Grand Prix, and that really is going to be the big difference. I mean, we really don't know a lot of the different parameters and the different settings that the teams are going with, who's using what compound tires, how much fuel they're running, all those different things, the amount of trim on the wings, the amount of downforce that they have, all those different variables that you have to take into account as well. And that, like I say, when I saw the timesheets from Wednesday, I guess it was, and Charles Leclerc was 11th faster. Well, I took that with a bit of a pinch of salt. I think that obviously when he gets called in for basically emergency duty and the car is still brand new and they're only 11th fastest, there's no way that Ferrari is going to be that slow come the season. So I think, again, once they get that car sorted out and dialed in, that'll be a completely different situation. And that leads into the next story, and to get the words from the man himself, from Charles Leclerc, who had the following to say, quote, "Of course, I think we had changed our approach compared to last year. Last year, the testing was great, but the first race was a bit less great. And yeah, I think we've learned a few things on this. And this year, we've decided to focus more on ourselves, trying to learn the car as much as possible in these first few days, and then focus on performance a bit later on. And we'll see if that pays off." Leclerc then went on to add, quote, "more about correlating the numbers from the factory and the track, and we don't know how competitive it is. Still driving a new car, I will push it to the limit of the car. We haven't pushed the car, but I'm pushing myself to try and know the car better. So the more laps we do with it, the more confident I'll arrive in Melbourne. So on that side, on the driving side, I've learned a lot. And then the different tests we've performed today, I think they've been very positive," end quote. And I think Charles is just really, I think he's really put to rest a lot of that doubt. And of course, I think that is an interesting insight into what Ferrari's doing. Get to learn the car now, figure out where they're at. How does it perform in real life rather than on paper, quote unquote. I'm doing the inverted commas in the air as I say that, because until recently, it was just something that existed in a computer somewhere. And then, of course, from there, there. It goes into the factory. It gets built, all the components, the power unit, the tires, everything goes onto it. Now it's out in the track, and they have to find out, is it going to react? Is it going to perform and behave the way that that they expect it to based on the design and the modeling and the testing that they've done in the factory, and now it's on the racetrack. So Charles, I think that if he's positive about it, and they're just going to spend these first couple of days figuring out what the car is capable of, and then push it as time goes on, then I think we'll obviously see those times improve as the SF1000 gets a little bit more miles under the belt. And of course, again, it is last year for me, winter testing, I think everybody just got I count myself among those people that maybe got a little bit too buoyant, a little bit too soon, just based on those numbers. Because again, like winter testing, I mean, there's so many different things to take into account that you really can't compare times against one another. So anyways, interesting to see just some of the positive feedback that we've heard, not just from the Mercedes guys, but also from Ferrari, also from Max Verstappen at Red Bull. And well, we'll see how winter testing goes. The big test comes in 21 days when we get to Melbourne. Anyways, now we're going to spend a little bit of time and talk about Mercedes, because there's a lot of Mercedes news and quotes floating around there in the media this week. And the first one comes from Toto Wolff, team principal at Mercedes. And he's been rather dismissive that Formula One is less attractive because of the dominance of his team over the past several years in the V6 turbo hybrid era. And he insists that despite that, despite Mercedes' dominance of Formula One, that the sport is what he calls on a really good path. Last year, of course, they won 15 out of 21 races. They smashed records and just collected so many points between their two drivers for another Constructors' Championship, and also the Drivers' Championship, which is Lewis's sixth, and just amazing sort of stuff. Anyways, Toto had the following to say, quote, "Mercedes winning a sixth championship, you can say, does this make people turn off? But the point is there that was still variability and unpredictability. You wouldn't know before the weekend if a Ferrari was on pole position or if a Red Bull was on pole position, whether Max Verstappen would win. The battle between the generations is something that is a great attraction. Vettel against Charles, Verstappen against Lewis. This is something that attracts audience. For me, the best news is that we are growing our audiences and fan base with the younger generations, and I think overall we're on a really good path," end quote. And well, that's really interesting, because growing the sport with younger fans, I think is absolutely crucial for the growth of the sport. Obviously, I mean, that seems a little bit redundant to say that, but Formula One under the guidance of Bernie Ecclestone, and I don't remember where I heard this quote. It may have been something I heard on a radio broadcast or on the television, or maybe. Who listens to radio anyways? Maybe it was on a podcast or some audio clip somewhere. Anyways, it was something to the effect of that Bernie, and I'm going to really paraphrase and parse here. He basically said he wasn't so much interested in the younger generation. For him, the ideal audience or Formula One fan was the 70-year-old guy that already has a ton of money and is willing to spend it. You know, that's great, but, you know, I hate to say it as we all get older and we have parents of that age, but I mean, people that are 70 have a ton of money. They're not really going to be around for the long term, are they? Whereas the younger generation, sure, maybe they don't have as much disposable income, especially if they're in their late teens, early 20s, you know, if they're students or maybe just out of college at their first job. But those are going to be your fans that are going to be watching your sports for decades, literally. So I just think that just focusing on one age group or another, one demographic or another, just seems incredibly close-minded, no matter what it is. I mean, it would just make sense that maybe you focus a little bit more on others, but why would you just focus on one specifically? But very insightful, I think, that you hear that from somebody on the inside, like Toto Wolff, that maybe obviously has a little bit more information than the rest of us do, that he really feels feels that despite that the dominance that we've seen from Mercedes over the year, when you look at the record books and you look at the numbers of races that they've won, the amount of world championships and things like that, I mean, it could be very misleading. Somebody comes into the sport and sees it just by looking at 2019, 2018, it's like, oh gosh, these guys just win all the time. This must be pretty boring. And you know, it can be, I guess, from time to time, depending on your point of view. But I mean, despite all that, I mean, we have had some very, very good races over the past several years. The World Championship between bitter rivals Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg going down to the wire in 2016. That was something to watch. I mean, we've seen the rise of Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc during that time as well. We've seen Ferrari come back to, well, obviously not domination. They've come back to competitiveness, and 2018 is a season that slipped through their fingers. I think that they had a real legit shot to win the world championship, at least one of them, between either the constructors or the drivers' championship. So there have been plenty of things, positive things to talk about. On the flip side, there have been some disappointing things. We've seen some constructors fall away. We've seen other teams struggle, like Racing Point and Force India, although obviously Racing Point is going to be Aston Martin next year, so they seem to be in good shape. You know, we've heard other things about the potential of other teams maybe leaving Formula One and other manufacturers like Renault, although, you know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the program, although they're saying now that they feel like they're on more stable ground. But like I say, I mean, when you hear somebody like Toto Wolff say that he feels that the sport is going in the right direction, that it's more stable now, that they're growing a younger audience, you have to be positive about that. And also when you hear that that a team like Mercedes, despite all the rumors to the contrary suggesting that they're about to pull up stakes and leave Formula One and go home, then why would they sign like a 4 or 5 year contract with another major sponsor that they have in Ineos? So again, you know, Toto Wolff, you know, poo-pooing and dispelling those rumors that is nothing more than that as well. So interesting to see. But sticking with Mercedes, excuse me, they've decided to against an entire new car approach for the first race of the season to get a little bit more on the technical side of things. And technical director James Allison said that this version that was of the W11 that was launched at Silverstone last Friday will not undergo any significant changes before the first race in Melbourne in a couple of races. Anyways, Allison had to say, quote, "We will be more conventional this year. We will still have a lot of upgrades for the Melbourne that will come in the second week of testing, but the entire new car approach of 2019 won't feature. Last year, the regulations were quite changed significantly, and they were decided quite late in the year. Under those circumstances, doing a launch car and a week two car gave us the chance to build the maximum amount of learning into our Melbourne car. With the regulations being more mature this year and with the opening step of the 2020 development already being made at the same level as the finish of last year's car, repeating last year's approach would not make sense," end quote. So yeah, very interesting that to hear that we're just going to see some minor upgrades coming to the Mercedes car in Melbourne in a couple of weeks. And again, like I said a little bit earlier, not only were the regulations decided upon very late in the year, also they did have some troubles getting the car really dialed in and really sorted out in winter testing, so you could understand why they made more changes later in the off season for that first race in Melbourne. But this year, I mean, everything's still basically the same. I mean, the cars look awesome, but I mean, you know, don't say that each and every year, of course, but they really aren't too radically different from what we saw in 2019. So to really go and make some drastic changes might be a little bit ill-advised. So we'll have to wait and see what they bring. But also Allison had to continue, quote, "The regulations stayed largely the same for the new year, so for us it was all about trying to make sure that we don't run out of development steam on a package that worked pretty well for us last year. If we had continued merely to add flourishes to the 2019 baseline, we would have found some gains, but in all likelihood diminishing returns would be kicking in by now. We wanted to change aspects of the concept of the car, aspects that would be completely impossible to change within a season, to give us a more fertile platform for the new season. We tried to make a few well-chosen architectural changes to keep the development slope strong, even though the regulations are now a little bit longer in the tooth, end quote. Anyways, Allison just reiterating and emphasizing a couple things that because basically the platform that they had last year in the W10 was obviously a very good car and brought them a great deal of success for last year, with the regulations being frozen, being the same basically this year as last year. Why would you go and make drastic changes to it? I mean, that old saying, I think, is very applicable. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And even though maybe James isn't quite as eloquent as myself, or perhaps the other way around, that seems to be the philosophy unspoken at Mercedes. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Did you know that every night local police departments across America receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms? The vast majority of the time, they have no idea whether the alarm is real. Is there really a crime going on or not? All the alarm company can tell them is that the motion sensor went off, but SimpliSafe Home Security is different. So if you are like me and are one of those guys who's hypersensitive to every single sound and is tired of having to sleep with a knife under your bed, then SimpliSafe is the solution. If there's a break-in, SimpliSafe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster than for a normal burglar alarm. You get comprehensive protection for your entire home. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home, and entry motion and glass break sensors guard inside. Plus, SimpliSafe protects your home from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide poisoning. It's 24/7 monitoring by live security professionals. You can set up the system yourself, no tools needed, or SimpliSafe can do it for you. And on top of that, it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. So visit simplisafe.com/overtime. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. So go now and be sure you go to simplisafe.com/overtime so they know our show sent you. That's simplisafe.com/overtime. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And we're going to stick now with Mercedes as we keep going on the rundown of what's been going on at winter testing and all around the Formula One paddock this week. Anyways, they did have some design issues, cooling issues with the W11 at Mercedes. And they've been focusing on improving that that cooling package on the new car. And that has been helped by the 2020 engine operating at a higher temperature than its predecessor. So that is kind of interesting. So apparently the W10 last year, the Mercedes car, did have cooling issues that the team couldn't fully address or figure out during the entire year because of the limitations that they had on the capacity of their radiators. And that was one of the big problems that they had at the Austrian Grand Prix, because it was a really, really hot weekend. I don't remember exactly how hot it was off the top of my head, but it was a warm weekend there. And that was a weekend when they were off of the pace. It was all Ferrari. It was all Red Bull. And it really came down to Charles Leclerc or Max Verstappen going to win that race, because they were two fastest cars on the day. But at the end of it, it was Max and that Red Bull that was just the winning package that afternoon. And I guess we'll all remember that that move on turn three where Max barged his way past Charles Leclerc to get into the lead, and he never looked back from there. Anyways, James Allison had to say, quote, "We've improved the cooling package. We've created more of a face area, so more actual radiator area in the car, which is a difficult thing to do mid-season without incurring quite a lot of penalty. But between the years, you can do it, and it won't cost you except a little bit of weight. We've also benefited from an investment that HPP made on our behalf. They've worked to raise the operating temperature of the engine, which eases the cooling burden on us, because of the hotter the fluid, the less radiator you need to cool it," end quote. So again, that is an interesting thing. If you do look at some of the pictures of the W11, the radiators are quite a bit different than last year. Okay, another interesting thing that that came up this week regarding Mercedes is they've come out and said that while the Formula E project that they had initially was a real strain on their resources, it is now actually helping and helping the F1 program after the past couple of years. And that comes from HPP engine boss, or Mercedes HPP engine boss, Andy Cowell, and says that their Formula E involvement is actually benefiting Formula One. So that is a really kind of interesting thing to say. And he had to say, quote, Formula E is a fascinating championship with the electric machine as the only device for propelling the car. Therefore, the efficiencies of that electric machine, the inverter and all the control systems are paramount. The torque accuracy delivery is crucial. Some of the development learning there has now fed back into F1. So for Melbourne this year, our F1 hybrid system will benefit from our Formula E development work. We've also made some manufacturing improvements that originate in the FE program. We manufacture our own electric machines, and some of the techniques developed for Formula E are being applied to the F1 electric machines as this year as well. This is exciting to see. In the past, we've seen games from the Project One development feedback into F1. Now we are also seeing the Formula E engineering and manufacturing technology feeding back into F1, end quote. So that that is interesting. I mean, they have put in obviously substantial resources and effort into Formula E, and that is a series, I must admit, that really intrigues me, and I really wonder how it's going to grow. You would kind of think that just from a logical point of view that at some point internal combustion engines are going to be a thing of the past, and something is going to replace them, be it hybrid engines or the complete electric cars. I mean, here in British Columbia, we've heard things that the provincial government here wants all electric fleets in the province by the year 2040, so 20 years from now, obviously. You know, whether that becomes legislated at some point, who knows? I mean, I've heard different things from different parts of the world. I mean, that obviously is where the technology is going to go. So, I mean, that is one thing to watch, just the direction of Formula One, where they're going to go, because at some point, even though the hybrid turbo engines that they have right now are just absolutely wonderful pieces of technology, at some part the internal combustion engine of it is going to have to become a thing of the past. The one thing is Formula One has always had it in their ethos and their mandate that it still has to be road relevant, and well, I mean, obviously hybrid cars are something that that we see each and every day. I mean, you don't have to go too far to find one when you walk out of your front door, but what they do in the long run is going to be interesting. But having said that, Formula E, from what I've watched of it, is very different. The racing and kind of the genesis behind it is a little obviously different than Formula One. And well, I mean, I've tried to get into it, but it just doesn't for me. And this is a little bit different, obviously. Just the whole idea about it, an all electric series racing, and just the development of the technology there, I think is a wonderful thing. I think that there's a lot of benefit to be had there, and I think that under the extreme conditions of motor racing, I think a lot can be learned. And obviously one of the things that that is important is the battery size, and that's always been, I think, one of the hindrances. Based on my limited knowledge, I'm by no means an expert on electric cars or Formula E, and I've tried to get into it. I've struggled a little bit, but I think that's more really to do with my schedule and just the lack of time. I mean, I can sit down, make time to for almost anything Formula One, and a lot of things as well, but to really sit down and invest myself in something else, I just really don't have the time for it. And you know, I already sacrifice time on other things when it comes to like baseball, football, and things like that. I don't watch as or enjoy that as much as I used to. But anyways, very fascinating to see that Mercedes feel that the effort that they're putting into Formula E is now starting to benefit and coming back to help the Formula One team, the Formula One project as well. But also sticking with Mercedes and Formula E, the FE Championship leader Stoffel Vandoorne, obviously that's a name that Formula One fans will be familiar with. He was with McLaren for a couple of years before leaving F1 to go to Formula E. And well, he left McLaren at the end of 2018. His seat was taken by Lando Norris at McLaren. But I mean, he's been doing pretty good in Formula E. And he he's a good driver. There's no doubt about it. I think it was just sort of a question of wrong place at the wrong time when he was at McLaren. I think when that last year when he was there, when they had the first year of Renault power, it was, like I say, I think it was more a bad timing than anything else. I mean, if you go back to his very first debut several years ago now in Bahrain, when he filled in for Fernando Alonso after Fernando had that horrible crash in Australia that one year. What was that, 2016 off the top of my head? Anyways, the car was destroyed and Fernando lucky to walk away from that, obviously, but he had some unintended after effects from that crash, and he wasn't able to race at the next race in Bahrain, but Stoffel came in as the reserve driver for McLaren, and he finished 10th in that race in his debut. I thought it was very, very good, but when he became a fully fledged driver for McLaren, it was just like I say, wrong place at the wrong time. They were struggling with the Honda power units and the reliability and the lack of power, and it didn't work out for him, but it is good to see him doing well in Formula E. And so he's been given the job as reserve driver for Mercedes, because Esteban Ocon, who was the reserve driver for Mercedes last year, of course, has moved over to Renault to partner Danny Ricciardo. So his job as a reserve driver has been filled in by Stoffel. So that is good to see. Anyways, are we going to talk more about Mercedes? Let me go through my notes here. No, actually, we're going to talk about Racing Point. So we're going to get back into some of the remaining car releases, excuse me, that have gone on over the past couple of days. Last week, we had all the big teams having their launches and events for all that. Excuse me. This week, we've seen some of the teams like Racing Point and Alfa Romeo. They've gone and done their reveals just basically trackside at Barcelona. I think that's a good way to do it. Like I said last week on the show, I'm not really one for the glitz and the glamour and all those sorts of things that come with Formula One. For me, it's very much about the cars, about the drivers, about the teams, about what's going on the track and all that flashy stuff I don't really have any time for. So didn't really have too much of a problem to see some of these teams do what Racing Point and Alfa Romeo did, basically wheel the car out of the garage, take some pictures, get the driver run, jump into it, and go off and get some miles on the car. But this launch of the Force India has not been without a little bit of controversy, because they basically have come out and admitted that they've basically followed the same design theory of Mercedes when it comes to aerodynamics, and the RP20, it does look very Mercedes-esque. It's a different car, but when you see it from certain angles, there are very much a lot of similarities between the Racing Point and the lines that we've seen on the Mercedes cars over the past several years. And Gunther Steiner, team principal at Haas, never one to shy away from an entertaining comment. Well, I mean, at least entertaining from a fan's point of view, but Gunther, he does call it like he sees it. And he had the following to say about Racing Point when it came to their new car, the RP20, this week. And Steiner had to say, quote, "Sometimes you have to think before you talk. I will say that one because maybe one day it's your turn and then you cannot go against it. As we all know, they complained quite heavily a few years ago, so now it is going full circle. It is up to them. I don't really care." End quote. So, well, basically what happened was there was a lot of criticism that was leveled at Haas. I mean, they came into F1 several years ago, and there was they were fast. They're fast for a new team. They didn't really go through a lot of the teething problems, some of the struggles that you might expect a new manufacturer to go through. They have this disagreement, this working relationship with Ferrari. They have a lot of these non-listed parts or whatever it is, and there was a lot of criticisms that came mostly from Racing Point or Force India at the time, that they were basically saying it was a carbon copy of the Ferrari. So Gunther very much referencing that and basically saying that people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones when Racing Point were so critical of the Haas being a knockoff of the Ferrari, but now it very much looks like the the Racing Point RP20 is a knockoff of the Mercedes. Of course, it has a Mercedes power unit in the back, but it is what it is. Anyways, Gunther did go on to say, quote, "We buy a lot of parts from Ferrari, so which car are we going to copy? I guess a Ferrari. I mean, if you will copy a Toro Rosso or a Red Bull, we would all be pretty stupid because we would try to invent something which is not there. So I think they are just doing what we are doing, just trying to get the best out of it and use that model," end quote. Anyways, Gunther, very much one who doesn't mince his words. And, you know, going back to the F1 Drive to Survive a series on Netflix, which debuts season 2 very shortly here, just in a couple of days. Gunther was he was basically a rock star in season 1 because we didn't have the involvement of Ferrari or Mercedes for the first year in 2018, and so I think they had to be fairly creative, the makers of the series, to go to some of the other teams, because you would just have to think that or expect that you're going to see those teams, you're going to see guys like Lewis Hamilton figuringly heavy in a production like that, and they didn't, because they didn't want to officially sign on to it, and the series didn't lack for it. In my opinion, it was just unfortunate that when you had footage of the Ferrari or Mercedes drivers or people, that it was all basically stock footage, and you know, there's basically sound clips from different media scrums and time in front of the microphone, and those are all very, what do you want to call it, managed, and they're all very professional, and it wasn't as off the cuff. But when it came to Haas and Gunther Steiner, he was about as off the cuff and about as real and as raw as you could get, and I really appreciated that about Gunther Steiner. So interesting to see his take on the whole situation with the Racing Point and the alleged copying of Mercedes. Anyways, the RS20, the Renault that was conspicuous in being not present at Renault's car launch last week, has hit the track in Barcelona, Spain, in basically an all black livery with yellow numbers. Kind of an interesting looking car. It's going to be their contender for this year. And Cyril Abiteboul, the team principal, said that the team had hoped on that not having everything on the car would really help pay off in helping them focus on areas with greater performance potential. He had to say, quote, "This year we decided to take a bit of a different approach. The regulations are stable, so it was offering a fantastic opportunity to keep some elements of the car that have no direct responsibility towards the performance of the car. It doesn't mean that it is the same car. It would not look very attractive. But what we have decided to do is focus on the performance areas, and by doing that, you also work towards 2021. If you can be focused on 2020, then you have some extra capacity available for 2021. That is the logic behind what we have done. Whether it works or not, let's see in Melbourne on the Saturday," end quotes. So Renault, for me, is a team that really needs to prove something this year. Very disappointing what they did in 2019. They just couldn't get it done. And it was disappointing in the sense that the forward progression that they'd been making over the several previous seasons, I think, started, at least in my eyes, it started to tail off a little bit in 2018. But last year, it felt like a regression. It felt like they were a step behind everyone else. I mean, McLaren, which is basically a comparable team to them, was much, much better. And that reflected at the end of the year in the Constructors' Championship, where Renault were... Well, they weren't really close to it. I mean, if you have a Ferrari and Red Bull as best of the rest compared to Mercedes, and then you had McLaren, who were fourth last year in the Constructors' Championship, they were the best of the rest of the rest. And, Renault, they couldn't even really match up to them. So we'll have to see whether or not they can get it done this year. But, we keep our fingers crossed. I'd like to see them rise up and to reach their full potential, because you have to remember, this is a team that's been very successful in Formula One over the years as both an engine supplier and as a works team, as a manufacturer. So we know that most recently they were the team that Fernando Alonso drove for back in 2005 and 2006 when he won his only pair of Formula One World Championships. So they do have it in their genes. They do have it in their DNA, but they just haven't been able to get it done over the past couple of years. Anyways, Esteban Ocon, one of the Renault drivers, had the following to say this week about the downforce of the car. And he had the following to say, quote, There are always differences. But to be honest, the amount of grip there is this year already, I think if you take it into account the fastest lap time, we are already faster than the fastest lap time of the year, last year, first day. So I think the cars are just evolving year by year. It's hard to compare, but the amount of grip I feel now, I think I've never felt before. I don't know if it's the track, but I drove on Monday in the filming day, and yeah, it's impressive, those new cars, I have to say. I never went that fast in some corners before, so it feels good. It's definitely exciting because it's just going to get faster and faster. So we're going to probably break all the record lap times of last year, this year, I reckon. End quote. Yeah, so Esteban Ocon, another guy that he has something to prove to me. I mean, he was a little bit unfortunate, I think, at the end of 2018, that by the time that the musical chairs of driver's silly season stopped, that he was one guy without a drive or a full-time race drive, that is, in Formula One for 2019. I mean, I thought he'd done very well in the year and a bit that he was with Racing Point. I thought, you know, he came in, what was it, the end of 2018, and he did very, very well. And, you know, it was unfortunate, but it just goes to show just how competitive it is to get a drive in Formula One and be able to retain it. And it doesn't really matter how good you are. You just, he was unfortunate in that regard, but being a Mercedes driver. And that was one of the things that, that was suggested that was maybe, limiting a move for him for 2019 was just that he had those links to Mercedes. I mean, he was fortunate in the fact that even though he didn't have a race drive, he was the reserve driver at Mercedes for 2019. But it was not without some ill-intended or maybe unintended consequences. And Ocon said that he was destroyed after a year as a reserve driver. You'd have to think that as a guy being able to get in some capacity with Mercedes would be a good thing, but he had the following to say, quote, "I mean, the season I had was very, very demanding. I was not sleeping for 2 days at a time. It was quite crazy, the amount of travel I was doing and the amount of hours I was doing in the simulator and then traveling to the track, doing stuff for Mercedes. They used me well, but a lot. So I arrived, to be honest, after testing in Abu Dhabi at training camp. I was in the lightest I'd ever been. I was destroyed basically from the year." End quote. So it sounds like it was very, very demanding, and he was destroyed for, well, maybe not in a mental sense, but it sounds like it was very, very demanding on him, just in all regards, just on his time, physically, mentally, emotionally. It sounds like it was a very, very high pressure season for him. And I mean, he's going from one very good racing team to another. I mean, Mercedes has been the gold standard for all those years, but Renault really has something to prove. But like I say, I think that Esteban Ocon has something to prove, even though he did very well those first, you know, that first stint in Formula One as a regular race driver. For me, what he had done had been tarnished a little bit, I think, by that incident that he had with Max Verstappen at the Brazilian Grand Prix at the end of 2018, when he was lapped by Max, and then he tried to unlap himself towards the end of the race. I mean, Max was way out in front. He was going to win that race. I mean, there was no doubt about it. And then as they went through turn two into turn three, Ocon tried to unlap himself. The two tangled and then went out. And of course, afterwards, they had a bit of a pushing match. Well, I mean, it was Max came and shoved Ocon around and then ended up having to serve a community service, which I think he did as a track steward afterwards. But, you know, it was just a one incident, I think, that, you know, kind of stood out in a bit of a negative light for you know, regarding Esteban Ocon. For me, but you know, I'd like to see him do better this year. And you know, Renault, like I say, he's got a lot to prove. The team has a lot to prove. Ocon has a lot to prove. Ricardo, I think, has a lot to prove. And he's going to be one to watch as well to see where he ends up going for 2021. Anyways, time for one final break here on Scuderia F1. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, Your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. Just going to stick with Renault just for a couple of moments more, and then we're going to slowly but surely start to wind it up. Renault says that they feel that they are in safer hands or in a safer position now than they were not so long ago when he was talking to motorsport.com earlier this week. Cyril Abiteboul had to say, quote, "On Renault, I guess the main development is the fact that we have a confirmation of the new government structure finally. It has been a number of evolutions like in F1, but now Luca de Meo, we have a clear CEO. He will not join before July, but we at least have a date and a name. In addition to that, the single most important piece of information, whether you got it or not, is the fact that Clotilde Delbon, current acting CEO, will remain as deputy CEO when de Meo arrives. That's very important. It means there will be a continuity of the governance, continuity also of the decisions, which means everything that we're discussing today with Mrs. Del Boss will be valid even when De Meo arrives." So that's good. I mean, there have been some questions. There have been some speculation in recent times that perhaps Renault is not going to stay around in Formula One, that they're getting ready to pull out. And honestly, I was a little bit concerned about that because those stories came out about the same time that perhaps Mercedes is getting ready to pull out and leave. Both teams have been, I think, fairly forthcoming and fairly forthright that that they have no intentions to leave Formula One, that that they're in the series and they want to stay there. Toto Wolff has said it's basically downright lies and rumors and untruths that that the Mercedes is going to leave. Whereas on the other side, Renault was for me a little bit shakier. It wasn't really all that cut and dry. To me, it seemed like it was a little bit foggy. But now we have news that there's a new CEO coming in, that perhaps they're going to be around for a while longer. Certainly hope so. Anyways, Renault said that they believe that they're going to be set for a game of chicken this year in Formula One. And basically that comes to that sort of imaginary line in the sand when teams will, I guess, abandon the development of the current 2020 cars and then focus on the 2021 car, which is going to take a lot of time and resources to design because they're going to be completely brand new, right? Anyways, when talking to Renault executive director Marcel Budkowski, the comment was, quote, "I think it's going to be a big dilemma. I think it's going to be a big dilemma for everybody. We have a plan. I'm sure everybody has. And that plan is to shorten development into the season. It is not less development. It's just a more concentrated development. It's easy to say this now because the season hasn't started, but at the front, it could be quite interesting if the top three are fighting for the championship and it's going to be a close fight. It is going to be interesting seeing who pulls the plug first and jumps into 2021. Are Ferrari, for example, willing to switch earlier and take a risk that another team will win," end quote. And I think that's the same for anyone. I don't think it matters if you're Mercedes at the top or Williams at the bottom or somewhere in the middle. At some point, they all switch the majority of their focus on the design for the next year. But this year being a year that we don't usually see with a massive change in the regulations coming for next year is something we only see occasionally in Formula One. We see evolutions and iterations of the current formula, but to see like a complete sea change of the rules and regulations doesn't come along each and every year. So, of course, it's really going to be interesting to see like who blinks first, right, and who decides, okay, well, we've our shot in the world championship is gone now. We'll do what we can with the car now, but we're not really going to do anything more regarding any further development of it, and we're just going to throw our marbles and all our concentration and focus into the design of the car for next year. Anyways, Alfa Romeo was another team that unveiled their car at Barcelona earlier this week. Again, they're sticking with the same driver lineup that they had last year in 2019 with Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi. It's still basically the same looking car. It's still got the base white color. The airbox and the wing end plates on the rear ring are a nice red color, and it looks really good. And again, this was an interesting one. Robert Kubica, who was at Williams last year somewhat unsuccessfully despite scoring the only point the team had in 2019, left after last year, but he's going to be the reserve driver for Alfa Romeo behind Giovinazzi and Kimi Raikkonen. So again, much like Racing Point, there was no real fanfare around the launch for the Alfa Romeo. It was basically done in the pit lane, and I like it. Looks good. We'll see what it can do on the track, but certainly it looks like a nice car. Anyways, we were talking about Williams just now. They've come out and said that the FW43 is it basically has not changed anything from last year's car, and there are no what they call quote fundamental concept changes in the design of the car for 2020. So again, last year's car, the FW42, it was a couple of seconds off the pace, and there was good reason for that. It was not a very, very good car. Anyways, it picked up just one point after 21 races, and like I say, that was Robert Kubica. And Williams has decided not to create a completely different car this year, and they want to instead to focus on the areas of the car where they think that there are big performance steps to be found. And I mean, they were a couple of seconds off the pace last year, and it seemed amazing that it seemed like only a couple of laps into the race each and every weekend. I know it wasn't that obviously, but it seemed very quickly after the lights went green at many tracks that it didn't seem like it was too long before the front runners were actually coming up to the Williams cars of Kubica and George Russell and lapping them. Anyways, Russell says that he feels that the FW43 feels much better than last year's car, and he had the following to say, quote, "I'd say definitely the general handling of the car is much better. From lap one today, I had confidence to push the car to the limit, whereas last year it was a nice feeling in the early laps. It was quite scary to drive actually last year in the opening laps, trying to build that confidence. Already that's better, but not always nice. A car to drive is a fast car." So it's a lap tape based sport, and it doesn't matter how you get around the lap. As long as it's fast, that's what counts. It's been improved in that area. Now we need to see if we have managed to put more downforce onto the car to compete with the guys around me, end quote. So George Russell, I mean, he sounds positive, but on the other hand, it sounds like that positive response is tempered by a little bit, I wouldn't say negativity, but I would say more of wariness hoping that he's hoping that they can get more out of the car based on what they have right now. But then also another team, AlphaTauri, which used to be Toro Rosso, they've launched their car for 2020. They're calling it the AT01. AlphaTauri is the clothing brand of Red Bull. I don't know. It's not something that I've ever seen, although I'm not exactly the most fashionable and up to date on that sort of stuff. But that's a completely different thing. But it's a nice looking car with basically a white with a black trim on it on the airbox and the rear wing and the end plates on the front wings. So it'll be nice. It'll be a little bit kind of weird. I mean, Toro Rosso's been around for quite a while, but it's a nice looking car. Anyways, Franz Tost, the principal at AlphaTauri, had to say, quote, "We are looking with a new car to a new season. I must say we are very optimistic for this season. Why? Because first of all, the car showed very good results in the wind tunnel. For second, Honda, our friends Netherlands and Japan. Sakura made big progress during the winter months from the performance side as well as from the reliability side. Third, we have two good drivers. They showed it already last year. We are really optimistic. The team must perform well. We have a fantastic partner with AlphaTauri, and I'm really convinced that AlphaTauri will have a successful season, end quotes. And again, they're sticking with the same driver lineup as many other teams are, and the drivers for AlphaTauri this year are Danny Kvyat and Pierre Gasly, who just seems to be like in a good, comfortable situation there. He just he struggled last year at Red Bull, and I don't think, looking back now, it was a real big surprise that they decided to pull that trigger and make the move, sending him back to Toro Rosso and moving Alex Albon up to partner Max Verstappen at Red Bull instead. It just seemed that once they did that, it was a move that worked out for everyone. So we'll look to see how they do once we get going with racing here. Anyway, so we're going to move on now just as we close it down with some of the business side of Formula One. Chase Carey, the CEO at Formula One, he's fairly positive about the where Formula One stands on discussions for a new Concord agreement, and he believes that the terms and the situation there will be better for everyone. And he had to say, quote, "We've got all the agreements on the table and we're comfortable. We've put together a proposal that is fair to everyone. We're in discussions with the teams. I think they're constructive. I think the sport will be better for the fans, better for the teams, and better for everyone. We think it's a real step in the right direction on all fronts we've talked about before, end quote. So yeah, it's not completely all wrapped up, but it is good to say or see that even though that there were, well, I mean the debate and the process to get the technical side for 2021, that took like a long time. But just in general, be it either with the Concord agreement or with the technical rules for and regulations for 2021, that we haven't really had anybody come and basically threaten to take their toys and go home. I mean, that always seemed to be Ferrari's go-to default move. That if there was any discussion about those sorts of things, it's not in our DNA. It's not in the genes of Ferrari and that sort of stuff. They just did seem to be automatically, very negative towards any sort of things. But I mean, in general, like I say, I mean, to get the technical side took a lot longer than I think many people expected before that was, something that was agreed upon and put into writing for next year. But now we just need to get the behind the scenes, the back end stuff sorted out. So if Carey's positive on that front, then I think we got hope that'll get sorted out sooner than later. And just talking about a couple of things now, just regarding a couple of the venues for Formula One, the Miami Grand Prix, which has sort of been on again, off again, and on again, off again for a good number of years now. Apparently they've cleared another major hurdle, and that's with some of the local opposition that they've had with people in and around the stadium. where they want to build this temporary track, and so there was it wasn't a landslide victory, but they had a vote in council, which ended in a 6-6 tie. But it means that the approval of the city of Miami Gardens, as well as the county, they won't need their approval anything going forward. So the owners of the Miami Dolphins, who are trying to put the race on, can now proceed with the plans to build the track for the Grand Prix within the grounds of the stadium, the Hard Rock Stadium. And that will be that's good news, because I mean not that I think it's a good thing that the wishes or concerns of local residents aren't taken into account. It at least appears from the outside that they've tried to do the right thing. I mean, maybe if you're in Miami, maybe you might have a different take on that. And if I'm seeing that wrong, by all means, let me know. Send me a tweet at Scuderia F1 or email at Scuderia hootieryf1pod@gmail.com if I'm completely off base here. But, you know, they've tried multiple venues and different layouts for the track over the years. And, you know, the concerns that people have, you know, are completely legit. You know, it comes from anywhere from pollution, both noise and also, you know, any air pollution from the cars themselves. You know, just the proximity of the proposed track near to, you know, around Hard Rock Stadium and local housing, you know, the impact that it has on traffic, all those sorts of things. And you can understand why people would be concerned about it. And, you know, the things that I saw was, and again, you know, if I'm seeing this wrong, you know, let me know. But it seemed that, you know, that they, you know, the people there, they were like, well, okay, well, you know, if you can get it sorted out and meet our concerns and do things the right way, then, you know, let's see if you can get it done. But, you know, it is what it is now. Anyways, they can go ahead without having to get the approval of the county and the city going forward. So we'll see how that goes when that might come onto the calendar. I mean, there was a possibility. There was that rumor, I think, last year after the Azerbaijan Grand Prix that was it. They'd sold the facilities. It was going to go to Miami, and they were going to be on the calendar this year. So again, you know, there has been talk that F1 could maybe expand up to a 25 race calendar, which is almost half of the year. I mean, 52 weeks in a year, 26 is, you know, 26 weeks is 50%. So 25 races is a very, very, you know, lofty goal. You know, it's obviously a big thing to try and do that. To maybe accommodate some of these, other venues. I mean, if China was going ahead, we'd have 22 this year, back down to 21, but you know, there's potentially a race going on in Saudi Arabia, you know, this second race in the U.S. at in Miami. I mean, you go to 24 right there, perhaps someone else, you know, that to bring it up to 25. And it is completely possible. I mean, there was that story going on a couple of years ago that, you know, Kerry was saying that they had up to 40 interested parties out there that wanted to host a Grand Prix. So we're not up to 40, but potentially up to 24. So again, we'll have to wait and see. But finally, it sounds like maybe something might be happening in Miami. So have to wait and see whether or not they come up onto the calendar or not anytime soon. Anyways, just one final thing here. There are going to be maybe some track changes, maybe in time for the 2021 Australian Grand Prix. And that's basically going to be a major paving and resurfacing of the track around Albert Park, which isn't a purpose-built racetrack. There's actual cars drive around there from what I understand. So you have actual traffic around there. And it sounds like the track has been in need of an upgrade for resurfacing for some time. Now, sounds like that's going to happen within the next year or two. Anyways, oh boy, I ran out of water here during the recording of this show. We're already over an hour, so I think I'm going to draw a line right there and just leave it for this week. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, please do so. I'd love to hear from you guys one way or another. You can send an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or on Twitter at scuderiaf1pod. We also have a Facebook page, not really super active there, but I do post new episodes on the Facebook page, and that is facebook.com/scuderiaf1pod. And that's it. Thank you so very much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to support us, it only takes a couple of moments of your time. And the best and the easiest way to do so is to go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to podcasts to and leave a 5-star rating and review. It really does help us, and it would really be very, very much appreciated by myself. And I really am grateful for all of you listeners coming and listening to me ramble on about our favorite sport each and every week. And even more so, I appreciate all of you that reach out just to say hi or you know, give some feedback, and it's all good. Anyways, like I say, I'm drawing the line there. That's it. That's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you guys again very, very soon. Bye for now. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to scuderiaf1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com.